The following is a recording for Melanie Carpenter of iAdvise on Thursday, November 10th, 2016 at 8 a.m. Central Time. This is the Intercorp Financial Services third quarter 2016 conference call. Good morning and welcome to Intercorp Financial Services third quarter 2016 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Rafael Bora of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, Katie, and good morning, everyone. On today's call, Intercorp Financial Services will discuss its third quarter 2016 earnings. We are very pleased to have with us Mrs. Michela Casaza, Chief Financial Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, Mr. Juan Pablo Segura, Chief Financial Officer of Interseguro, and Mrs. Claudia Valdivia, Chief Financial Officer of Inteligo Group. They will be discussing the results that were distributed yesterday. There is also a presentation to accompany these results. If you didn't receive a copy of the presentation or the earnings, it is now available on the company's website, ifs.com.pe, to download a copy. Otherwise, for any reason, if you need any assistance today, please call iAdvise in New York at 212-406-3693. I would like to remind you that today's call is for investors and analysts only. Therefore, questions from the media will not be taken. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mrs. Casaza, Intercorp's Chief Financial Officer, for her presentation. Mrs. Casaza, please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome to Intercorp Financial Services third quarter earnings call. We will start the presentation on page 2, where we will be discussing a summary of IFS results. IFS third quarter 2016 net profit was $208.7 million, a 17.2% growth quarter-on-quarter, but a 48.9% reduction year-on-year. The quarterly performance was mainly explained by a 10.9% growth in profits at Interbank, resulting from lower provision expenses. The yearly decline in profits was mainly a result of higher requirements of technical reserves at Interseguro due to a lower discount rate on annuities and a decrease in foreign exchange gains at Interbank due to a particularly high trading activity in the third quarter of last year that was not repeated in this quarter. Excluding discount rate impact on technical reserves, IFS third quarter results grew 23% quarter-on-quarter and 2.3% year-on-year. And excluding also the negative impact of lower trading activity in FX at Interbank, IFS third quarter net profit would have increased 25.3% year-on-year. At Interbank, the third quarter net profit was $221.5 million, a 10.9% increase quarter-on-quarter, but an 8.6% decrease year-on-year due to the previously mentioned reasons, which made other income year-on-year. Excluding such effects, profits for the bank would have grown 16% year-on-year. At Interseguro, third quarter result was minus 24.5 million, excluding discount rate impact on technical reserves, which represents a recovery of 25.6 million quarter-on-quarter and a decline of 4.1 million year-on-year. At Inteligo, the third quarter net profit was 48.4 million, a 9.8% decrease quarter-on-quarter, but a significant recovery year-on-year. The quarterly performance was attributed to a seasonal 15.8% decrease in interest and similar income, partially compensated by an 8.6% growth in other income and lower expenses. On page 3, you can see a summary of the key quarterly indicators for IFS. Net interest and similar income increased 1.8% quarter-on-quarter and 5.4% year-on-year. The quarterly and yearly increases were mainly driven by Interbank and partially offset by Inteligo and Interseguro. Fee income from financial services increased by 1.7% on a quarterly basis and 2% on a yearly basis, mainly due to a strong performance at Interbank, partially offset by an increase in Inteligo due to an extraordinary high third quarter 2015. NIM remained flat quarter-on-quarter at 5.6%, while NIM on loans at Interbank improved 10 basis points to 9.9%. PDLs remained flat on a quarterly basis at 2.5% at IFS level, and cost of risk improved substantially by 50 basis points quarter on quarter, down to 2.6%, mainly due to an improvement in consumer lending. Credit cards PDL ratio improved 80 basis points in the third quarter, down to 4.4% and below the system's average of 4.6%. Efficiency ratio was 40.9% and has been impacted by Interseguro's results for the high level of technical reserves due to the negative impact of interest rates. Excluding such effect, efficiency ratio would have been 37.9%, relatively flat versus previous quarters. Capitalization ratio for Interbank remains strong at total capital of 16.1%. Please turn to the following pages for a brief overview of the quarterly net earnings of IFS three segments. Before entering into the details of Interbank results, we'd like to give you a short update of the banking industry, which is impacting the bank's results, but which has allowed us to gain market share in many of our products. First, there has been a slowdown in loan growth in the industry, with loans growing only 3% year-to-date and 6% year-on-year as of September 2016. Retail loans grow 4% year-to-date and roughly 8% year-on-year, while commercial loans grow 2% year-to-date and roughly 4% year-on-year. Cost of risk has increased 10 basis points at system level over the last 12 months to 2.1%, and results from financial operations has decreased 34% year-on-year at system level, with a strong decrease in foreign exchange trading gains. When looking at Interbank figures, Interbank profits reached $221.5 million in the third quarter, with a quarterly growth of 10.9%. This quarterly growth was mainly due to $30.4 million lower provision expense and an increase of $9.9 million in fee income from financial services. The annual decrease in net profit was explained by a reduction of $55.5 million in other income and an increase of $39.4 million in provisions. These factors were partially offset by an increase of $33.4 million in net interest and similar income and $15.1 million in fee income, in addition to a lower effective tax rate. Interbank's ROE was 22% in the third quarter, higher than the 21.3% reported in the second quarter, but lower than the 28.2% registered in the third quarter of 2015. NIM decreased 10 basis points in this quarter to 5.9%, but NIM on loans improved 10 basis points to 9.9%. The decrease in NIM was mainly due to higher returns on investments in the previous quarter, while the improvement in NIM on loans was mainly due to a higher yield on the portfolio mix. On page number 7, performing loans grew 1.4% this quarter due to increases of 2.1% in retail loans and 0.5% in commercial loans. Retail loans increased due to growth of 3.9% in credit cards, 1.4% in mortgages, and 1.3% in other consumer loans. Commercial loans grew mainly due to higher trade finance loans and short and medium-term loans, partially offset by lower leasing operations. Performing loans grew 5.7% on a yearly basis due to increases of 8.6% in retail loans and 2.7% in commercial loans. Retail loans growth was driven by increases of 9.4% in mortgages, 8.7% in other consumer loans, and 7.5% in credit cards. Commercial loans grew mainly due to increases in short and medium-term lending, partially offset by lower trade finance loans and leasing operations. Our market share on total loans decreased 10 basis points on a quarterly basis, but increased 20 basis points in consumer lending. On page number 8, Interbank's total funding base increased 8% on a quarterly basis, mainly due to growth of 9.8% in deposits, 4.2% in due to banks and Interbank funds, and 3.5% in bonds. The quarterly growth in deposits was mainly explained by increases of 17.1% in institutional deposits and 15.5% in commercial deposits. The bank's total funding base increased 5.2% on a yearly basis. This increase was due to growth of 8.5% in deposits and 4.3% in bonds, partially offset by a 6.2% contraction in due to banks and interbank funds. The yearly growth in deposits was mainly explained by increases of 20.2% in commercial deposits and 13.2% 0% in retail deposits, partially offset by an 18.4% decline in institutional deposits. As a result, the portion of deposits to total funding increased from 68% in the third quarter of the previous year to 70.2% in this quarter, while the proportional of institutional deposits to total deposits decreased from 22% to 16.7% in the same period. The yearly contraction in due to banks was mainly due to a reduction in funding provided by the central bank. Our total deposit market share increased sharply during the quarter by 80 basis points, and the yearly increase in market share of retail deposits reached 60 basis points. On page number 9, when looking at SDF comparable figures to the system, Interbank's fast due loan ratio was 2.6% in this quarter, and the coverage ratio remains strong at 177%. The same trends are valid for the IFRS PDL figures. When looking at the PDL's breakdown, we can see within retail that overall consumer credit PDL has improved 40 basis points on a quarterly basis, down to 3.3%, and below the system average of 3.5%. Credit cards PDL improved substantially, or 80 basis points, down to 4.4%, and below the system average of 4.6%. Mortgages increased its PDL ratio by 10 basis points to 3.2%, in line with the increase of the PDL ratio of the system. Within the commercial portfolio, PDLs remain relatively stable and below the system average. The annualized ratio of provision expense to average loans improved 30 basis points, down to 2.8 in the third quarter of this year. This ratio remained above the system average of 2.0%, mainly due to the mix of our portfolio, with a higher incidence of retail and credit cards when compared to the system and to the other big three banks. Normalizing this effect of our portfolio mix, our cost of risk ratio would be at 2.1%. When looking at IFRS cost of risk figures, the improvement in the ratio is even bigger, or 50 basis points. On page 12, Interbank's capital ratio of 16.1% was 420 basis points above its risk-adjusted minimum capital ratio requirement, established at 11.9%. The minimum regulatory capital ratio requirement was 10%, while the additional capital requirement of this quarter was 1.9%. Please turn to the following page to discuss Interseguro's results. On page 14, Interseguro's net result attributable to shareholders in the third quarter was minus 54.3 million, which compares to minus 56 million in the second quarter and 156.2 million in the third quarter of the previous year. Normalized results, excluding discount rate impact on reserves and FX transaction impact, was 29.1 million, 31.1 million better than the second quarter and 38.6% higher than the third quarter of the previous year. The quarterly improvement was mainly explained by 70.3 million decrease in impairment loss on available for sale investments registered as other expenses, partially offset by a 31.3 million reduction in net gain on sale of securities registered as other income, coupled with a 28.1 million increase in adjustment of technical reserves and a 5.5 million impact on foreign exchange translation results. The yearly decline in profits was mainly due to a 116.9 million increase in adjustment of technical reserves, in addition to a 77.8 million decrease in net premiums and a 35.1 million decrease in net gain on sale of securities. These factors were partially offset by a 44.3 million decrease in impairment loss on available for sale investments. On page 15, you can see a comparison of Interseguro's IFRS results with local GAAP results. Interseguro's net profit attributable to shareholders in the third quarter was minus 54.3 million under IFRS, and positive 25.6 million under local accounting standards. The main differences between the two are as follows. First, a higher adjustment of technical reserves and the IFRS as a result of the use of a lower weighted average discount rate to calculate technical reserves for annuities. Second, a higher net gain on valuation of real estate investments as under IFRS they are considered at fair value. Third, a lower profit from sale of investment property as under IFRS gains are measured against market value whereas local GAAP gains are measured against cost. Fourth, a lower profit in foreign exchange as a result of different U.S. dollar stock of assets and liabilities in IFRS and local GAAP. And last, higher profit on sale of investment that had previously registered impairment losses under IFRS. On page 16, net premiums were $136.2 million, an increase of $6.1 million on a quarterly basis due to a $3 million growth in annuities and $2.6 million in retail insurance, but a decrease of $77.8 million year-on-year, mainly related to a market contraction in annuities due to the new law that entered into force in April this year, allowing retirees to withdraw 95.5% in their pension funds. Annuities market share year-to-date was 23.3%, which positioned Interseguro as the market leader. Adjustment of technical reserves in this quarter was $163.6 million, a 20.7% increase on a quarterly basis and 250% increase on a yearly basis. The quarterly growth was mainly due to a different discount rate impact in annuities. This rate increased by 9 basis points in the second quarter and by 12 basis points in the third quarter. The year-on-year increase was also a result of a different discount rate impact in annuities. This rate increased by 33 basis points in the third quarter of last year, but decreased by 12 basis points in the third quarter of this year. Net claims and benefits incurred in third quarter of this year were $78.7 million, a 4.9% quarterly increase and 14.3% yearly increase. The quarterly growth was mainly due to an increase in retail insurance, and the yearly growth was mainly explained by higher annuities pensions. Considering the factors previously explained, total premiums earned less claims and benefits resulted in minus $106.1 million in the third quarter, a decrease of $25.7 million quarter-on-quarter and $204.6 million year-on-year. On page 17, in the third quarter, Interseguro's investment portfolio reached $5,634 million, an increase of 5.7% on a quarterly basis and 20.9% on a yearly basis. Results from investments in the third quarter were $106.8 million, which represented a 7.8% return on Interseguro's investment portfolio, above the 5.1% reported in the second quarter, but still slightly below the 8% registered in the third quarter of the previous year. The quarterly and yearly growth were largely explained by decreases of $70 million and $43 million in other expenses, respectively. These effects were partially offset by decreases of $29.6 million and $34.2 million in other income, and decreases in other expenses were explained by high levels of impairment loss on available for sale investment in the second quarter and in the third quarter of the previous year. On page 19, we will start with the discussion on Inteligo's group results. Inteligo's net interest and similar income in the third quarter was $19.8 million, a 26.7% reduction when compared to the second quarter. Net interest and similar income, though, decreased 13.3% compared to the same period in the previous year. These results were attributable to lower income on investment available for sale and higher interest expense on deposits and obligations. Net fee income from financial services was $31 million, a slight decrease when compared to the previous quarter. But when compared to the third quarter of the previous year, net fee income from financial services decreased 16.9%, mainly attributable to a decrease in fund management income, partially offset by a decrease in fee income expenses. Inteligo's other income reached $17.8 million in the third quarter, an 8.6% increase quarter-on-quarter, mainly due to a higher net trading gain, partially offset by lower net gain on sale of securities. Other income reverted positively when compared to the third quarter of last year. The result was attributable to recoveries in net gain on sale of securities and in net trading gain. Other expenses decreased 2.2% when compared to the previous quarter as a result of a reduction in salaries and employee benefits. Intellios other expenses decreased 26.6% year-on-year, mainly explained by an impairment loss on available-for-sale investments reported in the third quarter of the previous year. Excluding such charge, total other expenses in the third quarter were 5.6% lower year-on-year. As a result, Intelligo's net profit in the third quarter was $48.4 million, a 9.8% decrease quarter-on-quarter, but a significant recovery year-on-year. On page 20, assets under management plus deposits reached $14,605 million in the third quarter, an $811 million or 5.9% increase when compared to the previous quarter, and $2,250 million or 18.2% increase when compared to the third quarter of the previous year. Intellios loan portfolio increased 5.4% quarter-on-quarter and 4.2% year-on-year. Revenues generated by Intelligo reached $69 million, an 8% decrease quarter-on-quarter, but a strong 54.5% increase year-on-year. Intellios bank fee income divided by asset under management increased to 1.1% in the third quarter. To finalize the presentation, on page 22, we can summarize the key takeaways as follows. At Interbank, slower growth given current market environment, 13% year-on-year growth in retail deposits led to a 60 basis points gain in market share on such segments. PDL ratio improved 10 basis points quarter-on-quarter, remaining below the system's average. At Interseguro, premiums recovered quarter-on-quarter after the annuity market stabilized upon the new regulatory environment, however, still below the last year's levels. Results from investments improved quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year, mainly due to the sale gains on available-for-sale investments as impaired securities recovered, and a strong double-digit annualized growth in the investment portfolio, both quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year. At Intelligo, asset under management plus deposits increased 5.9% quarter-on-quarter and 18.2% year-on-year. Normalized results on the investment portfolio drove revenues up 54.5% year-on-year. And net profit increased more than twofold year-on-year. At IFS, profits increased 17.2% on a quarterly basis due to strong core results at Interbank and Intelligo. And on a yearly basis, net income continued to be negatively impacted by higher requirements of technical reserves and Interseguro due to a lower discount rate on annuities, in addition to lower net gains on foreign exchange transactions at Interbank. Before your questions, we would also like to give you an update on the stock repurchase program that we approved last May 25th in our shareholders' meeting. Since our last conference call, where we already gave an update on the buyback program, Interbank has bought 1 million IFS shares. This means that, as of today, the total number of shares acquired from both IFS and Interbank since the launch of the program is 1,441,000 shares. Now, we welcome any questions you may have.
Thank you, ma'am. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key. That is star one on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Carlos Rivera from Citi.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for the presentation, Michaela. A couple of questions from me. The first one is regarding asset quality. Very good improvement in this quarter on provision for loan losses, 3.1 going down to 2.6%. So is there anything extraordinary here, maybe high recoveries? We obviously saw some improvements in the past due loan ratios for all segments, and consumer and wholesale. Just wondering what are the trends that you're seeing for the past due loan ratio and for the provisioning cost. That will be my first question, and I'll ask the second one after. Thanks.
Good morning, Carlos. Regarding asset quality, as you can see on slide number 9, this is coming mainly from the retail banking, as we have seen a recovery in the PDL ratio of especially credit cards. Credit cards is a product where we have been, let's say, growing slowly during the last 12 months, okay? And there has been a series of measures that we've been undertaking in order to try to focus more on the best credit risk profile clients. So basically, this has been an improvement, in especially in the month of August and a little bit in September, but it's a trend that we need to continue to track over the next month, given that the market itself is not growing very much. Okay, so we believe this is the result of some of the measures we've taken in our underwriting standards, in our collection capabilities. We've seen a slight recovery also in the delinquency ratio of recoveries. And it's something that we are still working on, and we need to see also what continues to happen over the next month.
Okay, so you would say that probably the 2.6% cost of provisioning that we saw this quarter is roughly somewhat a normal level.
We shouldn't go back to the previous levels that we registered during the previous quarter.
Okay, great. And my second question is regarding the net interest margin. A flat quarter over quarter, of course, being pressured by interest expenses that continue to go up. So I'm just trying to understand, what should we expect for the NIM on a more normalized scenario for the currency? Is your spread on soles denominated loans higher than in U.S. denominated loans? So if that is the case, should we expect that once the FX stabilizes, we could see a positive effect of the NIM because of the de-dollarization of the economy? Is this the right way to see it? Any color there will be great. Thank you.
Regarding NIM, what we are foreseeing is to have a relatively stable NIM. Of course, that is going to be the result of different driving forces, as you were saying, more solid, but also a different impact on the portfolio mix. So basically, we are expecting a slight recovery of commercial loans, not, but within commercial loans, what we are expecting is also a recovery of mid-sized companies and small businesses. That should help on one side. Then, with an increase in rates, we believe we should be able to transfer that to a portion of the clients, but not necessary to all of them. Okay, so that could put some pressure on both dollar and soles margins. Okay, and we are also expecting, especially by year end and the beginning of next year, a lower growth of mortgages due to the prepayments coming from the funds liberated by the new regulation on private pension funds. Okay, which should decrease a little bit the proportion of mortgages to total retail loans. No? So that is another force that will go on the positive trend. So putting everything together, we are betting more on a stable NIM for the upcoming months.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Miguel.
Thanks for your question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alonso Aramburu from BTG.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the call. I wanted to ask you, Miguel, about loan growth. We saw a pickup in credit card growth this quarter. Should we expect this kind of growth to continue? And what are your expectations for 2017 for overall loan growth for Interbank? And my second question regarding Interseguro, we saw an improvement on the annuity performance growing quarter over quarter. Have we seen the worst in annuities? Do we think we'll start growing from this lower base from now on? Just if you can give us a little bit of color in that respect. Thank you.
Good morning, Alonso. Related to loan growth, I commented that at the beginning of the call, the loan growth that we are seeing at system level, no? It's a loan growth that we didn't see in a long time. And basically, we are expecting a 2017, which is slightly better than what we are seeing this year. Not as much better and we would have expected, because still we see that it's taking some time to pick up, okay? So basically, if this year ends up growing roughly 6% total loans, we would be more in the line next year at system level, maybe growing an 8%, okay, which is still not a fantastic growth. And within that, there will be different things going on different directions, again, because the impact that the regulation on private pension funds has on the mortgage portfolio. But we expect a slight, let's say, recovery on the rest of the retail portfolio and on the commercial portfolio when compared to this year. And what we would like to do is always try to grow a little bit faster than the system grows. So we should be expecting the bank to grow a little bit higher than the 8% of the system. And relating to annuities, I'm going to ask Juan Pablo, who is sitting here with me, to give you an answer.
Hi, Alonso. Good morning. Short answer to your question, yes, we think we've reached the bottom in terms of the annuity market. When we see the quarter-over-quarter performances, I would say threefold performance reasons why the annuity market is going up. One, we have all this backlog of retirees that are taking the decisions now to go into annuity that were holding their decisions in the last couple of quarters. The share of annuities of the available funds of retirement has gone up again, not back to the 80% we had pre-law, but much higher than the 5% we had in the last couple of quarters. So that's a good indication that the annuity market is recovering and has the potential of keeping the growth for next year. On the other side of the coin is the disability and survivorship market. That's almost half of the market of annuities. That was not impacted by the law, and that's growing at high single digits quarter over quarter and almost double digits year over year. So I think we've seen the bottom, and we should expect annuities market go up in the next quarter. Still lapping Q4 and Q1 versus last year, but starting Q2 next year, we should start seeing a positive number there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. We are now holding for questions. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Our next question comes from Louis Adimi from Newfoundland Capital Management.
Hi, everyone. Just a question concerning your capital ratios. They've been relatively higher than usual for this year. Now, considering lower credit growth for this year and, you know, a scenario of not that much more growth for next year. Are you considering, ramping up your buyback program, or should we expect a higher dividend ratio, payout ratio? How are you seeing that excess capital situation?
Actually, today we are standing at high total capital ratio, no? So the 16.1% that I commented, which is also above the system average. But when speaking about total of ratio of core equity tier 1, we're roughly standing at a 9% core equity tier 1 ratio. So basically, we are keeping these two ratios, and what we are expecting for next year is that as growth resumes slightly, we would continue to be okay with the regulatory requirements, but we are not thinking on changing the policies that we have applied in the past related to this issue.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Once again, we are now holding. Please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question. At this time, I am showing no questions in the queue. I'd like to turn the call back over to Ms. Casassa for closing remarks.
Okay, thank you everybody for joining us during this quarterly call, and we'll see each other in the next quarter call. Thanks.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.